JT, live in Vegas.
Football season is finally here.
Number one, I love football.
Oh, yeah.
And I love the Raiders.
We go balls out with the Raiders.
Just win, baby.
My father used to say that the greatness of the Raiders is in its future.
I'm all in.
We go balls out with the Raiders.
Dominate, commitment to excellence.
There is unfinished business.
The best and most elite Raiders insiders right here exclusively on this show.
Oh, yeah.
Just win, baby.
Here I am, and I'm ready to get to work.
And now, live from Las Vegas, here's JT the Brick.
All right, good to have everybody on board today. JT with you, brought to you by Golden Entertainment, the powerhouse that is PT, Sierra Gold, Sean Patrick's. Oh, the stratosphere. Have you seen the stratosphere yet? Arizona Charlie's and the Flip. They got the best happy hour in town for you sports fans, and the fantasy football draft kit coming up. We'll be talking about that heavy, heavy all month here. How to build your fantasy team with guests all tied into our partnership with PTs. Very busy show today coming off the weekend, which to me was epic. I was locked in all weekend watching golf in Tiger Woods, and it was one of the greatest golf experiences I've had on TV, dating back to when Tiger was winning majors. I really believe that. And this is a golf town. Las Vegas is a golf town. Phil and Tiger will have their match play here at Shadow Creek. There's been great historic moments in golf with celebrities, from Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra all the way to Tiger and Furyk and the legends who have come through Vegas and have won here. Talk about golf on this show. If you got an opinion on what happened with Tiger Woods, give us a call at 876-1340. It could have been, I'm saying it could have, because it was real close. It could have been the biggest story of the year. It would have been one of the biggest stories in sports. It would have been, in my opinion, at a comeback level of Muhammad Ali. I put Tiger on the Mount Rushmore with Ali and Jordan. Okay, so there's four on Mount Rushmore. You can put Jack Nicklaus, you can put Michael Phelps, whoever you want. But Tiger Woods, to me, is on the short list, ahead of LeBron James, who you're hearing about at a nauseating level. Even on days where LeBron does nothing, the media is coughing up LeBron. Tiger was this close, you can't see my fingers, for having one of the greatest moments in the history of golf. Ralph Ervin, who I work with at Fox Sports Radio, is in the building. We'll talk to him about the degree and the level of that round on a historic level. I'll go first. I think it was the greatest round in the history of golf when it comes to a scramble and a guy who grinded to get through a round. If you look at the greatest rounds ever played, Johnny Miller, 63 at the U.S. Open at Oakmont, all of Jack Nicklaus combined, all of Arnold Palmer, all of Gary Player, whoever you want. Tiger Woods, with a fused spine coming off back surgery, shot a 64, his lowest round ever in his career in a major on a Sunday, and almost won that bleeping tournament. And he didn't hit a fairway on the front nine. That's what made it magical. You see, what happens when you or I play golf, what's your best round? What's the best round of golf you ever played? It was probably your best round, right? You hit your best drives. You putted the best. You hit the most memorable shots you can remember because it was your best round. That wasn't close to Tiger's most dominant round ever. And it was his most significant because he had a scramble and he struggled the entire round. All the one putts, all the big shots, everything that he had to do, it could have been a golf miracle. And I thought I was witnessing it. I was at home for the first nine with my family. Get a call from one of my buddies. He said, get down to Red Rock by my house. He goes, go to Red Rock, get to the casino. The place is exploding. I go, no problem. I'll be there in 15 minutes. I pull up to Red Rock. I go in there. It felt like it was the college basketball tournament, second round. There were people standing up every time Tiger hit a putt. The place roared. It was incredible for golf. I've never seen anything like that in a casino for golf. Seen it with the Super Bowl or other sports down the road. So I'll tell you, I was hooked in. I thought it was a miracle, and he should have won. But Brooks Koepka was just a robot. I mean, he's just a robot. And the way he was able to go out there and put together that great round was fabulous for him. Tiger beats anybody else and wins his 15th major if Brooks Koepka is not on that golf course. So for those who said, oh, and I was going to rub it in, Bobby. I was going to come in today. You think I could be hard and obnoxious? Oh, if Tiger would have won, I would have quieted all the zombies who said, he'll never win again. Well, there's a lot of those tough guys who are listening and have been saying that. They got blogs and they tweet, he'll never win again. Oh, he'll never win a major. Oh, really? I was going to come in and hammer that point home and play all the elite whistles and bells that I had it. Because I believe Tiger will win multiple majors, and I'm on the right track. And if you don't want him to win, you're a hater. And you're right, you have the right to not like him. You know, people didn't like Ali when he didn't want to fight in the war. People didn't like Jim Brown, greatest football player of all time. My good friend, Pete Rose. Very critical of Pete Rose. Barry Bonds can't get into the Hall of Fame. They retired his number. Athletes at this level have fans and multiple distractors and fans that don't like him. Tiger's now rebuilding his life, and he's doing it on the golf course. Let's get to the ninth hole and the birdie that really sent the charge up because, again, at this point, he didn't hit a fairway on the front nine.
It started tracking the first fist pump of the day, and it was a double. And there was some vocalization there. Tiger is fired up, 11 under, headed to number 10.
I mean, on the back nine, he's right there. Reminded me of Karnowski in the British Open when Tiger was playing at such a high level. And Tiger had the lead at the Open Championship at Karnowski, but couldn't close it out. Let's go to the 15th, where Tiger was roaring and the crowd was insane. It's outside St. Louis.
164 from the middle of the fairway to a back right hole location over the top of the bunker. Should be a perfect number, and it is! Tiger Woods has stuffed it! That is a bounce back birdie with authority from Tiger Woods at the 15th. Oh my goodness!
So then by Tiger getting to the 18th, and again, his driver wasn't good. He was just driving it very sporadic with his driver. But he hits a great drive on 18, and even though it looked like he would not win, he needed to go birdie just in case.
Tiger plays it out to the left, breaking right. He fist pumps it.
And then he gets the fist pump. So Tiger Woods is right there at that moment in a position to win the golf tournament. But Brooks Koepka would have needed to fall apart down the stretch. Brooks Koepka on 18, just like a robot putting it away.
Koepka from outside 15 feet, staring another birdie, and this would be a three-shot win. Ball on its way, tracking towards the hole, dying just in front of it, and he'll tap that and wins the PGA Championship. The man is made for majors. Brooks Koepka wins the 2018 PGA Championship at Belrive.
So let me give you a couple topics because I'd like you to interact on this. On Twitter at JT the Brick or on the phones at 876-1340. I believe it's the greatest round ever played by Tiger Woods when it comes to fighting and battling. I don't recall ever in my life, and I've watched a lot of golf from Jack Nicklaus through Tiger Woods, where a guy played and struggled that much and shot a score like that. Agree or disagree with that? And for those who believe that Tiger Woods is not back, Tiger Woods, if you take a look at his scores at the Open Championship and obviously sitting there at the PGA Championship, I think he puts together two of the great major runs I've ever seen for a guy who didn't win two majors. It was that incredible. I think it was special. And I think the thing I want to throw out to everybody today is this. Please be firm with your opinion on Tiger. If you believe that Tiger will win a major again, sound off like you got a pair. If you don't, you're sitting on the fence and you do not have an opinion. This is the biggest backyard barbecue topic in sports. If you can't go into a sports bar, if you can't go into PT's and the bartender comes up to you, the server, and says, hey, what'd you think about Tiger? And if you can't firmly look someone in the eyes and say, well, he's going to win a major, or he'll never win again, you've got to frame your opinion on this. He's Tiger bleeping Woods. I had so much fun watching that golf tournament. I just was on the edge of my seat. Thank you to Tiger Woods. Brooks Koepka, again, three majors. He's won three of the last seven. He missed the Masters with an injury, so technically three of his last six starts. I don't know, maybe he's the next guy to win 11 or 12 majors. He's so athletic. Ralph Ervin, kind enough to join me. He is a great friend. I've worked with him at Fox Sports Radio for well over a decade. He's a golf insider. You hear him on our network during all of our shows and on the weekends. And what'd you think? I mean, you're our golf guy on the network. That had to blow you away.
It was fun. It was exactly what you want out of sports. It was fun. There was a story there. And to me, seeing a guy just battle. And he battled with a smile. Like, the stuff you may or may not have seen on air is the things that really the insiders are talking about.
Right.
This guy who was Mr. Head Down, storming from one green to the next tee, always in mode, in game face, was high-fiving fans in that same moment. He's a different guy, and he appreciates where he is. And when you see any athlete enjoy that in the competition, whoa. Now you have something that's even bigger.
That is a great point. Before you came in, I was talking about Ali and Ali's comebacks and everything that happened. Ali was the greatest of all time of trash talking, smiling before the biggest events in the world. And for Tiger Woods, that was the biggest event in the world in golf on Sunday. And he was right back to killer instincts, old Tiger Woods, and hitting shots. Now, here is what we talked about before we came on and when I saw you in the lobby. I think it's the greatest round I've ever seen in my life by any golfer who struggled. Because anyone who shot 63 or lower had the greatest round of their life. They never drove it better. They never putted better. They were just locked in. Tiger was nowhere near at his best. What's the problem with his driver, and why can't he be consistent off the tee?
I think he's still learning who he is as a golfer. I think that he's limited in what he can do in terms of practice and preparation. To give a comparison, think of Freddie Couples, who is sometimes able to put together, even now, great rounds at the Masters, but obviously can't sustain it. And I think he's still trying to figure out who he is as a golfer. When your reputation is made off of being the longest guy, and now you're not even in the discussion, you have to stop trying to keep up with the guys you're playing with. And he's playing with Gary Woodland, who is a really long player.
Yeah, he's a long player, no doubt.
And it's in your head. I mean, anybody who's ever played golf, I'm sure you've experienced it. The guy you're playing with just unloads a bomb off the tee, and you're like, I got to keep up with him. And what do? You hook it left, you fade it right, and your hole's done. For Tiger, it wasn't. And that's how locked in he was in that regard, was he was able to get rid of it and move forward. He played cornerback. He had that cornerback mentality. You forget the last play, you go on to the next.
Great analysis. Ralph Ervin in studio with me, Fox Sports Radio, Fox Sports Radio Golf Insider. That's a great point. So all the times he was off the tee and not in the fairway, he hit these incredible approach shots.
Yeah.
Is this as great as you've ever seen him back to 2000 with his irons play? Anything from about 180 to 130 and his wedges, he's just flag hunting. I love that about him.
He was. The course allowed for it.
Right.
But it's not an excuse, because anybody else could have done the same thing. In fact, they should have done the same thing because they were in a better position. They didn't because they couldn't. And he did because he can. I've seen him put on hitting exhibitions over the years. Not in tournament, but an actual demonstration. I've seen him put a ball through a golf or through a telephone book from 75 yards away.
Wow.
Okay? I mean, think about that target. And I've seen him do it. So I know what kind of ball striker he is. I've seen it in person. This was just... So this was the total package. Forget five-tool player. This was six-tool player, because his mental strength allowed him to then carry off each one of these shots.
Ralph Ervin's our guest, Fox Sports Radio. Now, we've just spent, and critics could say of us now and about the mass media, we're spending all the time talking about a guy who didn't win.
Yeah.
And we're not spending any time talking about Brooks Koepka. And I get that. I was at Shinnecock where he won the U.S. Open. And he's not flamboyant. He's not a guy that, you know, talks it up much. He's not great at selling the sport of golf. How great is Koepka? He's at three now. Give me a projection at his age with his athletic ability, what he can do.
It's going to be all about his determination to be that good. Is he going to be able to maintain it for that extensive period of time? He's, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him get up to 9 or 10. I don't know if he'll go beyond that because you ask the guy and he would say, I'm not a golfer, I'm an athlete who plays golf.
Absolutely. I see that. Excuse me. When I watch him on TV, I was telling my wife, he looks like a guy who just got off of work. Mm-hmm. He's fit. They're giving him a couple of clubs. And he's just better than everybody, and he knows it. He doesn't choke. It doesn't seem like he has that choke factor that we've seen Dustin Johnson have, right. Rory McIlroy have. Why is he different? Is it mental?
There's a few things going on there. One is I think he has a general detachment that he doesn't care that much.
Right, excellent.
Which helps. There's another which you go into his biography and you see it as soon as you really dig into his bio. This guy didn't make it coming out of college. This guy had to go to Europe to make his way onto the PGA Tour. And he went and he struggled a little bit and then he started to dominate in Europe. I mean, that's not easy. Like, again, think about a major league ball player that went to Japan and then came back to have a great career. Think about a basketball player that went to Europe to play and become a star. It takes something really special to go over to say, I'm going to win where I am, and then I'll advance when it's time. And that's what he did. It was something, there are guys out there that had their eyes on him when he was in Europe, and they were saying, this guy is going to be awesome when he gets to the PGA Tour. Because you could see it. You could see it was in the makeup, in his performance overseas, that he was going to be this guy. Now, whether his body holds up, that's going to be the question.
Ralph Irvin, as we wrap it up in studio. I mean, you could tell by our excitement. I just love this. And I was so critical of Tiger for his behavior in Vegas, the women outside his marriage, the most recent DUI where he didn't even know where he was in Florida. He thought he was in California. I mean, what happened to his personal life? But it's the case study in American sports and in politics. These guys get torn down, and they get built up again for their next chapter. And the sad part about yesterday, Ralph, was the fact maybe he never plays a round of golf that good ever again, where everything that could happen, one putts, hitting balls behind trees to 15 feet and knocking the putts in, all of that, for that to happen at Augusta on a Saturday or Sunday, for it to happen in, you know, at a British, it's going to be really tough to do that. What should we be thinking about Tiger going into next year's majors starting at the Masters?
Look for him to really get his game on track off the tee. If he can do that, he would have won the British Open if he didn't have a bad tee shot at number 11.
Why did he hit iron on the back nine at Bellerive when he blocked an iron again? Why not use the three wood? Why not the hybrid? They make clubs that let you land the ball in play.
Well, he's getting there. He had a driving iron, a hybrid, if you will, at the British. He is a guy that is going. You want to know what to look for? Look for Tiger Woods to be a player that starts having a golf bag that doesn't look like everybody else, because he's starting to buy in. He's now gotten away from a blade putter. He's a guy who's going to, this is my area, is golf club technology.
Right.
He's a guy who's buying in now to what is available to him to make him a better player, to help him. He's a guy in his 40s trying to compete with guys in their 20s, and he's looking to do it. And I'll tell you this, JT, 10 years ago, after that round of golf, Tiger's upset.
Yeah.
Yesterday, he was the first guy to meet Brooks Koepka at the scoring tent to congratulate him.
It's a great moment.
That guy is that's the guy that's going to win again on tour. Not the angry, competitive Tiger. It's the guy who can compete with a smile and enjoy where he is in the game, because he's going to be able to deal with the adversity better than he ever did before.
Great analysis. Thanks for coming in studio.
Always a pleasure.
Ralph Irvin joins us. We're brought to you by the Henderson Hyundai Superstore right there on Boulder Highway in Henderson. Go see Frank. Go get a deal. They love the Vegas Golden Knights. They'll work with your credit. They'll work with make and model, whatever you like. There's a deal waiting for you at the Henderson Hyundai Superstore in Henderson. Wow, good Tiger Woods conversation. Did you see what happened with me and Marshawn Lynch on TV? We'll get into that coming up in a little bit. You're listening to Fox.
Awesome. I mean, I saw some recognizable faces that had gotten a little bit older. I saw some old friends that they mean a lot to me. And like I said all along, this is a great responsibility. The nostalgia's worn off. We gotta do something with the opportunity. But it was sure great to see the Raider fans, and they stayed with us until the end. I really appreciate it.
I was there with Gruden at the press conference, and yeah, I thought he was super excited. I'm happy that the Raiders got him a win. Gilbert Marzano covers boxing at a high level. He covers the Raiders. He's doing such a great job at the Las Vegas Review-Journal. And, Gil, what'd you think about the game? Because it was really sloppy. There were a lot of penalties on both sides. It wasn't pretty to look at if you were at home watching on TV. But I think there was some positive takeaways for the Raiders. How'd you see it?
Yeah, JT, it's kind of a typical preseason game. It kind of drags on. But I think for the Raider fans, they should be excited about what they saw in the rookies, especially at the D tackle with P.J. Hall and Mo Hurst. It feels like suddenly the Raiders are pretty stacked when it comes to the D line, something we haven't said in many years when it comes to Khalil Mack and getting help. But P.J. Hall looked impressive. He was creating havoc there in the trenches along with Mo Hurst. P.J. Hall was active with his hands. He got a sack. So it was kind of exciting. I know it's still preseason, it's still early. But when you guys like Mario Edwards Jr., you got guys like Justin Ellis, and maybe Eddie Van Andersen comes back healthy, suddenly the D-line for the Raiders is looking very positive. And we still haven't mentioned Artie Key, who could come back this week against the Rams in L.A.
Yeah, I think that was really important that P.J. Hall came out of that with a big game. He needed to prove to the Raider fans, when you draft defensive tackles, and you got a sense of following this team and seeing what they're doing with the roster, they can't swing and miss anymore at the D-tackle position. This can't be Jelly Ellis and a bunch of guys. And they believe that they went out of their way in the draft to really shore up that defensive tackle position, along with Arden Key coming off the edge, assuming Khalil Mack comes back with Bruce Irvin. I think that's going to be a drastically improving pass rush.
Yes, it's been a while since we've seen a solid draft class from Reggie McKenzie and the Raiders ever since 2014 when they got Khalil Mack and Derek Carr. Those are the two cornerstone franchise players, but after that, they didn't provide any help, it seems like. So now, you get this class, it could, you know, maybe, you know, change the outlook of the Raiders. If you look at just last year when the Saints, you know, probably one of the worst teams on defense, and they get a really good draft, and they draft really well, and they're in the playoffs. So sometimes a draft class could help an NFL team make it to the playoffs in just 1 year. That's how fast the turnover is within the NFL, but you know, credit for Paul Gunther for I and P.J. Hall. I know Paul Gunther loves those guys. They're kind of, you know, hidden gems, undrafted. P.J. Hall wasn't even invited to the combine. So Paul Gunther and Gruden, props there for, I know maybe it's a risk going second round for a guy from Sam Houston State, but when you like a guy and you believe in your scouting, you go get him. So far, the early return has been positive. Still a lot to go, but yeah, when you want to, you know, get better right away, it comes through the draft, and so far the Raiders are looking good with it.
Gilbert Manzano joins us, does an unbelievable job covering the Raiders, also boxing at the Review Journal. I think it was important for Gerrion Conley to get back to practice, updated me on that, and the Raider fans who know that he's got to be not penciled, penned in, to start a cornerback and play at an elite level. I mean, the Raiders have done a lot to upgrade that secondary, and there's going to be a lot of competition there, but if they can just know that they got a potential star at one of the corner positions, I think it's going to do wonders to that locker room.
Yeah, Gruden wasn't when he first came to join the Raiders, he wasn't, you know, happy about the roster. He didn't care if some guys were drafted really high a year ago, you know. But when it came to Gerrion Conley, something about him really impressed John Gruden. He kind of gave him the job. So like, you got Rashawn Melvin there on the other side, and then Gerrion Conley, who only played two games last year, hasn't been available when it comes, you know, to practicing. But for Gerrion Conley, he's really impressed John Gruden to still have faith in him. And it kind of takes a lot to get that with Gruden. So whatever he's doing right. And for him to come back before training camp, you know, is over. It's a good positive sign in having Gary on Conley, but I'm excited to see him too. I think it's kind of a rush to give him the job after not proving it last year, but hey, when you know, and I think that'd be something of a very crucial position to get better, especially last year when they couldn't even get an interception until November. A lot of big plays happened. So if you have Gary on Conley and Rashawn Melvin's looking very solid, and you got some backups like Leon Hall and Daryl Worley, again, you know, suddenly they can have, you know, a good, I know maybe not the best quality talent, but you can have depth and you can move around guys, especially with the slot. So I think overall secondary has gotten better so far, you know, and after one game in preseason.
I thought that when Marshawn Lynch ran by me down the sideline, the burst was incredible, and there was no need for a hold on Miller because it happened after I thought Lynch got by the hole. How'd you see that play there? And I thought Colt Miller kind of reacted well after that. Assess his play and what you thought of Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah, maybe the hook warranted a flag, but it was away from the hole. It was away from the play. Marshawn Lynch was the one that hit that hole with speed and burst, and it seemed like the old Marshawn. I know it's kind of tough to believe in a running back who's 32 years old, but just from that seeing that play, that speed is still there. He still outran the safety when he came to that second gear. So Marshawn Lynch still has that speed, but more important, he can hit the hole, which is hard to do in the NFL sometimes, get that cut and go through. So Marshawn Lynch looks, you know, rejuvenated. That's one position that John Gruden didn't really, you know, revamp or, you know, nitpick. I know he brought in Doug Martin, but it seems like Marshawn Lynch is still going to be the bell cow. Maybe they could use Jalen Richard and DeAndre Washington in a much better role when it comes to the passing game. And who knows, but with Justin Warren, again, you know, more depth, more guys that could, you know, help out the Raiders. So Marshawn Lynch looks okay. I know he's 32 years old. I know guys like, you know, Frank Gore and John Riggins have, you know, have beat a lot of time when it comes to as a running back over 30. But we'll see how Marshawn Lynch looks, and so far it's been okay.
Finally, Gil, I wanted to ask you your opinion overall on the Khalil Mack issue, because nobody knows. I've talked to Reggie and Coach Gruden about this, and they got a difficult agent, and the agent is protecting the client. Aaron Donald's not signed with the Rams. The Raiders don't want to break the bank and overpay for Khalil Mack, and no one knows what the market is. I mean, is he worth more than Von Miller? Well, Von Miller's got a Super Bowl ring and an MVP in the Super Bowl. So what do you think could happen here in the short term? Because the Raiders really have his rights for another 3 years. They have this rookie contract this year. And then obviously what's happening with the potential to lock him up with a couple of franchise tags. What do you think?
I think John Gruden and Paul Gunther kind of want to make Khalil Mack earn it, which is kind of hard to say, especially a guy who was all pro in two positions and a defensive player of the year award not too long ago. But John Gruden hasn't been around. He wants to see Khalil Mack with Paul Gunther and how he reacts to much more help on the defensive line. So you mentioned he still has 3 more years, one in a fifth-year option, a couple franchise tags. So Khalil Mack, you know, is going to have to come back eventually. They still control, you know, his rights. So I think John Gruden wants to make him earn it. But the thing that could be a downside is if Khalil Mack, you know, I don't know if he's a guy who holds grudges, but if he holds a grudge and he remembers this when it comes to the franchise tag and say, hey, these guys wouldn't pay him right away, why should I, you know, stick around? That's up to John Gruden to convince Khalil Mack in the next year or two, hey, we like you. It was just tough love. We wanted you to earn it. Look at you. Now you're doing much better. You're probably getting 15 sacks because we pushed you. So who knows how it is, how it plays out. But, you know, if John Gruden's confident in the way he gets to people, the way he motivates people, then, you know, good for him. I think he said a couple weeks ago that the Raiders weren't even good with him on defense. So that kind of showed you that he wants them to earn it. But I think Khalil Mack will stick around. I think he'll do much better with these guys. He might enjoy it now with P.J. Hall and Arden Key and Mo Hurst. And who knows, you know, he's good friends with Derek Carr. I think he likes it. He might, you know, he might be, I guess, a little scorned by not getting his money early. But at the end of the day, he might forget about it and then maybe it'll be a happy marriage for a long time with Oakland and the silver and black.
Yeah, I hope that's the case. I look forward to having you on with the build-up to Canelo and Triple G. Thanks so much for making time for us.
Thank you, JT. Always a pleasure.
You got it. Gilbert Manzano does a nice job covering boxing and the Raiders. I like the guys who understand the Raiders are coming. The Raiders are coming. How can I cover this team? Because, again, I want everybody to do well. I got a lot of people that I work with in the industry, but he's up in Napa. He's grinding. He's bringing good stories. Give him a follow on Twitter. He's fantastic at what he does. When we come back, a Hall of Fame voter. Haven't talked to Howard Balzer. Great NFL insider. Really, I'm not making this up. One of the most connected guys I know in the NFL. Find out his post opinions of the Hall of Fame and some of the issues and injuries and the quarterback play. How about the play of Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield to start off the preseason? Give us a follow on Twitter at JT the Brick. We're on Facebook at JT the Brick. This is Fox.
Fourth down, a yard and a half, close to two. Mayfield shotgun, takes the snap, short drop, looks up in the pocket, running right, it's wide open on the right. He's to the 10, to the 9, to the 8, and he's into the sideline, and it's first down and goal.
Baker Mayfield, along with Sam Darnold, some of the rookie play. Howard Balzer, kind enough to join us, a Hall of Fame voter, one of the most connected guys I've ever met in the NFL, BalzerFootball.com. Howard, let's begin with your most recent trip to Canton, Ohio, your takeaways after what I thought was an epic class.
Yeah, it really was quite a class, JT. And I'll tell you, you know, I go back, I was counting it up. This is the 31st enshrinement weekend that I covered. You try sometimes just to take a step back and not be jaded by it. I don't know if that's the word, because I'm up close. I see these guys. I do radio shows. I interviewed about 20 gold jackets.
Wow.
And you almost feel like you don't want to take it for granted that these are Hall of Famers that I'm talking to, and certainly have gotten to know guys over the years. But yeah, like you said, you know, a great class. It was unfortunate that a guy that wasn't there, Terrell Owens, was a big subject of discussion among a lot of people, certainly, and among Hall of Famers and all that. And overall, I think many were just disappointed that he did not choose to be there with his new teammates. But that was the choice he made. Of course, did his own speech that afternoon. But I don't know. I don't think it took away at all from the ceremony. Excellent speeches, as always. And like you said, you know, a great class that now has 318 people in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And by the way, 140 Hall of Famers were represented in Canton, with about 110 living Hall of Famers there. And one great thing the Hall of Fame does that a lot of people don't realize is they invite the immediate families of deceased Hall of Famers there to participate in the weekend. And many take advantage. Terry Upshaw, Gene Upshaw's wife,
yes,
is there. Sylvia Mackey, the widow of great Hall of Famer John Mackey, is there every year. And it's really impressive to see them along with all those other gold jackets, like I said.
Howard Balzer joins us. One more follow-up on the Hall of Fame. A lot of criticism, at least on my shows and other shows, about Ray Lewis's speech being very preachy, very faith-based, which I don't have a problem with, but considering his past and what was happening, for him to jump in front of the podium and to go on that long speech over 30 minutes, what was your takeaway on that one?
You know, I certainly can see where some might be put off by it, you know, a bit. He didn't address it in depth, but he did refer to a dark period in his life, mm-hmm, and how he was able, in his mind, able to overcome it. And that's Ray. That's Ray Lewis. You got from Ray Lewis what he is. And, you know, some people, like you said, didn't like it. Other people thought that, hey, he was speaking from his heart and talking about things. You know, last year, you know, LaDainian Tomlinson gave a speech. I thought, I wouldn't call it preachy, because he's a different guy in the,
yes,
way he delivers things. But he also spoke about a lot of the things that Ray Lewis spoke about. So I think if we break it down to what he was saying and not how he said it, I think that, you know, many should, you know, you should consider that in terms of where he was coming from.
Howard Balzer is our guest. As we move on, I would love to get away from the anthem discussion, but I can't. I was in Oakland with Marshawn Lynch again, not standing. You go around the league, two of the Dolphins, some Jaguars stayed in the locker room, and it won't go away. What are you hearing behind the scenes as each individual owner is being told by the commissioner to step back on this issue, not inflame it, not talk about it? How come the NFL from the league office can't figure out a way to put this behind us heading in to the start of the season? Or will it never be behind us, because there will always be athletes who want to protest social injustice?
No, there might always be. I think, you know, the NFL probably should have stepped in a lot earlier when this was going on. But I also, the thing I don't understand, JT, is why they decided to do what they did in May. Because the reality was, while it was talked about at times, at, you know, the second half of last season, it wasn't a major issue. Nobody was making a big deal of it after it kind of wore away after what the president said in September. And so I think that there was progress being made with the dialogue between the players and the league. And I think if that had continued and what the league hadn't done in May, I don't think we would be talking about it as much. And the other reality is, of all the teams that played, you know, you what do you have? Multiply by 90. Of course, a lot of guys are injured, but still multiply by 90 times 32, the number of players there are in this league, and there might have been 15 tops that decided to do something. So, but that's always going to, you know, create comment because it's a divisive issue. The unfortunate thing is that the narrative gets lost, and, you know, I don't have any problem, JT, with those who say, hey, protest somewhere else. That's their opinion. That's fine. They're entitled to that opinion. But when people say things like the players don't even know what the issues are and all that, and they don't even know what they're protesting about, that's pretty insulting.
That is
insulting.
And
I think that is what bothers the players more than anything. It's not necessarily opinion, but the rhetoric that gets out there. And I don't know what they can do right now to solve it, with the exception of, again, continue the dialogue, continue doing things in the community, because the reality is a lot of these players who are doing it are very active in the community and trying to find some solutions and answers for the things that they are, you know, that they are voicing their disappointment with.
Wrapping it up with Howard Balzer, you've been doing this a while to know that there's always going to be one or two rookie quarterbacks who come in the preseason and light it up because they're playing against second and third strings, whatever it is, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold. And how difficult is it with all your connections with owners and GMs for GMs and head coaches to stand strong and say, I don't care what Darnold looks like or Baker Mayfield looks like in week two or three. I'm going to bring him along on our timeline because I think John Dorsey wants to start Tyrod Taylor. But the noise in Cleveland is going to be enormous. And the Jet fans, you saw this today from the Post to Newsday. They're all saying he's the savior. Put him in. What do you think is going to happen with those two quarterbacks by game one?
I think there's a real chance that Darnold might end up starting. But to address the first part, it is a tough thing for coaches and GMs because no matter how ready a quarterback looks and how, quote, NFL ready he might have been entering the league, the reality is, you play a rookie, you're going to have your offense scaled back when the season begins. But we saw what Carson Wentz did, you know, his rookie year. I think, of course, that wouldn't have happened if the Vikings hadn't come calling with a trade offer for Sam Bradford. But and I think generally it's good to get a guy out there and let him learn, let him make his mistakes, because whenever he gets out there, that's going to happen. But every team has a different set of circumstances. You want to have a running game and an offensive line that will protect them. But it's, you know, it's tough. But I think Darnold could end up being the guy when you look at it and you know that, hey, the Jets aren't going to make the playoffs, so why not play him? The Browns are a unique situation because we know they're probably not going to make the playoffs. But on the other hand, they know they've got to win some games to erase the you know, one win in two seasons. And so you're probably going to go with Tyrod Taylor because he gives you the best chance of winning early. But if losses start mounting and it starts looking, you know, hey, let's remember a few years ago, the Jaguars came out before the season and said, Blake Bortles isn't playing this year. We're sitting him. He's not going to play. And then when things look pretty awful after five or six games, they reversed it. And so you still could see that in Cleveland if things aren't going well with Taylor. But you just have to let these things play out. And every team has a different situation.
Where you live in St. Louis, as we wrap this up, in my opinion, and you know St. Louis and the market better than I do, would Stan the Man Musial, Kurt Warner in the Super Bowl, if Tiger would have won in St. Louis, I think it would have cracked the all-time greatest moments, literally, in the history of that region. How great was it for that community to see Tiger roar on the back nine Sunday?
It was unbelievable. And I had so many people even saying to me and talking about it during the week and saying, can you imagine what would happen if Tiger just puts himself into contention, what that's going to be like on Sunday, and it surely was. And then he comes in second, but he sinks that last putt, and that iconic, you know, camera shot of him going up the stairs and looking down on this massive crowd and giving the thumbs up was phenomenal. And yeah, it would have been unbelievable with a win, but it was still incredibly unbelievable, like you said. And the other part about it is watching most of the minutes of this tournament. What was great, JT, was that you hardly ever heard people screaming, "In the hole, in the hole." You know, you never heard that stuff. You know, the people just watched golf and appreciated what they were seeing, and showed what tournament golf, especially majors, should be all about. And like you said, it was a great moment for St. Louis that has taken a lot of crap in the last few years because of what happened with the Rams. And most understand, or I think most should understand, that St. Louis didn't lose the Rams. It was taken out from under them, and that's just the way it goes sometimes. But this shows, along with a lot of other things, what a great sports town this is for not just baseball.
You're the best. Thanks for joining me, my friend. Talk to you soon.
My pleasure, JT. Anytime.
You got it. Howard Balzer, one of the best. Two great gets. Gilbert Marzano and Howard Balzer. Howard Balzer coming on to kick off our Monday edition of the show. When we come back, how Marshawn Lynch, I thought, was going to photobomb me, which I could live with, but he decided to live TV photobomb me, and it got interesting. If you didn't see it, you'll hear it next. Part of my weekend up in Oakland on Fox. JT back with you, courtesy of Golden Entertainment, your home for PT's Happy Hour. Look at your watch. It's coming up at 5. Go to any PT's in the Valley. An amazing night. You can watch baseball. All the sports. Get ready for your fantasy football draft right around the corner. Let me set the table. I'm up in Oakland for the first preseason game. I'm doing the sidelines on TV. And they tell me in the second quarter, you got Derek Carr. I said, great. Always good. I do this four times a year. So we get Derek Carr, we put the headset on him, and all of a sudden I look to my left, and Marshawn Lynch is kind of hanging around me. And Lynch doesn't talk to anybody, I repeat. His entire career in Seattle, he wouldn't talk at the Super Bowl. You know Lynch. So he doesn't talk. So I don't worry about, at this time, anything happening. All of a sudden, Lynch walks closer to Carr, and they're counting me down in the truck saying, 5, 4, 3... And then the broadcast, Beth Mowins, goes, let's go down to the sidelines. Here's JT. Beth, I do have Raiders quarterback Derek Carr. We saw you in a series. Assess your play early on, especially with this offensive line.
Oh, I mean, offensive line did a great job. Marshawn looked fast as he ran down the sideline. They caught it back. But, no, I mean, I think that we played well. We were efficient coming out of the huddle, all those things. And we didn't want to show much, so it was fun.
The difference, we've talked about your prep in the offseason with Coach Gruden. What was it like prepping during game week?
We got to practice against them twice, which was awesome. So, practicing against them helped, with the game planning and things like that. But, in a preseason game, you don't really watch much on them. You don't really get ready for them. You just kind of go out there and run your plays.
Marshawn, you had a big run that was called back. Talk about your speed on the second level.
Derek's interview was not very exciting. He's a much better and more excited person away from you guys.
I agree with that at times. Hey, Derek, let's jump upstairs because Rich Gannon is a former MVP. He's now in our broadcast group. What does he mean to you?
Sorry?
Rich Gannon, who's in our broadcast group. What does he mean to you as you're getting better every year?
Oh, man, I love Rich. He's helped me a lot. He's always got great information and things to share. His leadership, his way he did things. He's an MVP. He's a great quarterback, one of the best to ever play here, and it's awesome to know him.
Rich, Derek, I'll throw it back up to you. Jump on in.
Derek, how cool was it, be honest, to have Peyton Manning at practice and to be able to pick his brain and just ask him about some of the things that you had on your mind.
Yeah, I mean, it was awesome, you know, and you know, to have him out there, you know, to learn from him, to, you know, have him talk to us and share some things. He was very open, and obviously he's one of the best to ever play. So to learn from someone like him was really cool.
Well, you know what? You're doing the right thing. We're proud of you, brother. You've bought in. You've worked hard. You're going to have a great year. And it was fun. Even though it was six plays, it was awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, yep. Derek.
Thanks, guys.
You just said something, Rich. That's a big deal. You said you bought in.
All right. So that could have went really, really bad. Because Marshawn at that point, who says, you know, Derek's better with his teammates than he is with us guys in the media. I was just happy to get back and get out of that and go back up to the booth. So that was a highlight for me. Only interesting part about that. So I have my phone turned off, Bobby, during the broadcast. I turn it on. I find out it had 1.2 million views on Instagram, 250,000 on NFL's Twitter, and 675,000 likes on the NFL Facebook page. Marshawn being Marshawn. I think that's the last time I hope I have to talk to him. Or he ambushes me. I got 3 games left. I'll just make sure he's not looking when they throw down to me. Thanks to Bobby who put the show together. We went and saw Alice Cooper at the Palms, which is nice. And Gilbert Marzano, who came in, was fantastic. Howard Balzer, balzerfootball.com. Looney joins me at the top of the hour. It'll be a bit of a Tiger Woods love fest tonight. And a lot of the recap of the NFL. Heading into week 2 of the preseason, that's next.